Welcome to Retina Health for Life from the President's Corner, brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists. I'm your host, Dr. Tim Murray, coming to you from Miami. On each episode, we'll bring you inspiring conversations about your sight and the special role the retina plays in making healthy vision possible. We'll hear from expert retina specialists, as well as directly from patients, about living life to the fullest with retinal disease. Join us and learn how to safeguard your retina health for life. On this episode, we're going to talk about uveal melanoma, the most common eye cancer in adults that affects approximately 2,000 people in the United States every year. To discuss this condition, I'm happy to welcome a friend and a colleague who is a world-renowned oncology specialist and retina specialist, Dr. Prithvi Mruthyunjaya, who is the director of the Ocular Oncology Service at the Byers Eye Institute at Stanford University. Welcome, Prithvi.
Thank you, Tim. It's really a pleasure to be here and so nice to be able to chat with you. Thank you.
So Prithvi, our audience, and we're really focused to talking to our patients, their families, their friends, people that may have less of the medical experience that you and I share, about eye cancer focused on melanoma. Can you give me your impression of where ocular melanoma fits in the spectrum of eye disease and why it's important? And how do we talk to our patients about that?
Thanks, Tim. First, let me say this is really special for me because, you know, I'm the student speaking to the teacher. You are such an accomplished leader in this field, and we've learned so much from you and continue to do so. But here's how I think of it. So when I talk to my patients, I tell them that ocular melanoma or uveal melanoma is the most common type of cancer that can develop within the eye itself in adults. That means that this type of cancer didn't start somewhere else and didn't then come to the eye. It started, unfortunately, within the eye itself. And when we hear the word melanoma, we think about spending too much time out in the sun or not using enough sunblock. Skin melanoma, that's the most common type of melanoma that's that people have to deal with. Ocular melanoma and skin melanoma are two different diseases, in effect. I think of them as distant cousins. They may have the same last name, but they are behave different. And on the medical side, we say that they are biologically different. We know that they're genetically different. So even though they share some features that may be similar, their dark color, maybe some features when we look at them under the microscope, they fundamentally behave differently. And the eye melanomas, because of their location, can have a profound effect on patients' vision. The tough part about melanomas in general is that they have a propensity to want to not only take damage in the area that they're located, but also find ways to go to other parts of the body. And that's a process called metastasis, which I'm sure we'll talk about. The challenge with eye melanomas is that even though they are maybe fractions of a centimeter in size in the eye itself, they can be rather dangerous because they have an ability, if not caught soon enough or if not treated properly, or just because of their own genetic predisposition, to find a way to go to other parts of the body. And then it gets really challenging. So eye melanoma and skin melanoma, I think it's important for your listeners to know, are distinctly different. And just because you have one does not mean that you will have the other.
I think that's really important. You and I live in states with lots of sun exposure in California and Florida, and our patients know much about skin melanoma, and they think that that is the ocular melanoma. And in fact, even some of their physicians, their medical care practitioners in primary care or even in oncology may have less experience with an ocular melanoma. Why are these cancers, you know, so concerning in terms of how we detect them, Prithvi?
it's really important to be able to detect any type of melanoma on the skin or in the eye at the earliest possible time point. The reason is that we know the larger these melanomas grow, meaning the longer that they go untreated or undetected, there are changes that occur within the genetic fabric of the tumors themselves. Whereas it may have been very small and not really destined to do anything beyond the eye itself, but if it grows and undergoes a mutation, that can then make it more likely or more easily able to leave the eye and spread to other parts of the body. And that's what we call metastasis. So the fundamental effort that I think, you know, you've been a proponent of, and many of our retina specialists who are also ocular cancer specialists, have been trying to figure out how do you detect these lesions early and at a point that they can be treated and diagnosed so that you give the patient the best chance for not only keeping their eyes healthy, but also to keep them healthy from head to toe.
So Prithvi, we know with the skin cancer melanoma that sun exposure is really the greatest risk factor. Could you give me some of the suggestions of what the unique risk factors are for eye melanoma? And really, who is at greatest risk to get that within our society?
That's a good question. So unlike skin melanoma, where clearly UV light exposure is a culprit, ocular melanoma does not have those clearly defined clear risk factors. What we know is that Caucasians, so lighter skinned individuals, may have a greater propensity. And we know this because of just the types of patients that develop these types of cancers and where we see them most commonly develop around the world as well. We find that it's equal opportunity. Men and women both can develop ocular melanoma equally, but it tends to be in middle-aged to older individuals. So age does seem to have an effect on this. Young children, interestingly, and maybe luckily, are very uncommon patients of ours with ocular melanoma. There are some rare genetic predispositions, though, Tim, as you know, of some genetic syndromes in which patients can have multiple cancers, and that can go along their family tree. But that's pretty rare. So it is not likely that just because I have an ocular melanoma, my siblings or my parents or my children would have it. But I think you would agree if I'm your patient with an ocular melanoma, you'll want to be sure that that all of my family gets checked just to be sure that everything is safe.
Well, you know, I'm a little bit like you, and in a perfect world, every person would get checked. So if there's any known risk factor that I can identify, I want to look at everyone. And when we talk about looking at patients, Prithvi, I assume you're saying we want a dilated fundus exam where the pupil is dilated and we use the indirect ophthalmoscope and maybe we take some photographs or use some ultrasound evaluations. Is that how you look at your patients also?
Absolutely, Tim. Often, when patients are coming to my clinic and your clinic, there may already be a suspicion that there is something that needs to be further assessed. So the best way to do it is to do a full eye examination where the specialist is looking from the front of the eye to the back of the eye and all of the different layers. And that does require putting those very annoying eye drops in that dilate the pupils, makes it blurry for a few hours. But there's nothing that can take the place of that uncompromising view and examination. So just like when you go to your physician's office for your checkup or your physical, and they have you get into a gown, it's almost like the same thing. You have to be able to allow your specialist to do the job that they need to do. And you bring up another good point about using cameras and other instruments to better diagnose these conditions. And in our setting, we're using these imaging tools to be able to not only document what we're finding so that we can follow these lesions, but it also gives us at very ultra-structural levels with such detail information about these tiny little lesions that can help make or break a diagnosis and help to guide treatment for our patients. All these other tests that need to be done really help to give a composite image of the tumor and then help us to understand what's the best way to treat it.
So, Prithi, I think that's important. I think to look back a little bit, when we have patients that may be at risk, I focus on a couple of simple things also. Even though we know sun exposure may not be a cause, I do recommend that they wear sunglasses, particularly in a high sun exposure area like we live in. And then luckily for us, we're seeing fewer and fewer people smoking, but that's another risk factor that I think is something that our patients can play a role with. And then I ask them to be healthy and to eat healthy, sort of simple, commonsensical things. You've also focused on the importance of getting to these tumors early. So I'm always hopeful if one of my colleagues screens a patient and sees a pigmented lesion, that they think about maybe sending the patient for an evaluation within an ocular oncology or retina specialty office. What are your thoughts about how to refer and when to refer?
When our patients are diagnosed with these eye melanomas, even though I've told you that eye and skin melanoma are different, you know, I will take a look at my patient and see if they have a lot of freckles or if they've had a history of other skin issues. It's a great time to re-hook up with their dermatologist. It's also a good time, and I liked how you emphasized kind of general well-being and diet and good health maintenance. Sometimes we forget to get our tests done, our prostates checked, and our, you know, our mammograms and our pap smears. I think these are all important things that are good just general health maintenance. And sometimes it takes something happening in one part of the body to remind us not to forget other parts of the body too. So I appreciate that comment. So in terms of when our colleagues, either optometrists or ophthalmologists, or even other retina specialists see a lesion in the eye that they are unsure of, and you know, many will know for certain this is something that requires an advanced evaluation, and they will refer to either a retina specialist who is very familiar with the care of eye cancers, or to a special center in which there is only a focus on eye cancers. So I think the best thing that we do is we communicate well with our colleagues. So sometimes our colleagues will send patients to us, and they may include a photograph, or they may even share that photograph with us before the patient comes so that we can anticipate what we're seeing. I think setting the bar low to make sure that there aren't troubling signs that could be easily missed is something that's very important. I think that you can find something that you could easily, you know, just write off in your mind saying that can't be dangerous. There's no way something that small could be. But we may be looking at it as specialists with just a different eye in terms of our instrumentation and our imaging and our experience that may bring out something that could be a little bit more dangerous than not. So we encourage patients to, you know, to be sent to us so that we can, you know, give a thorough look over. And if we decide at the end of it that, you know, this is something that should be watched, it's not dangerous, but, you know, could in the future do something, we can create a partnership with their local eye doctors to be able to you know, follow them with us or share in the follow-up and make sure that we don't lose an opportunity to catch something very early and treat it rather than waiting for it to, you know, to go spiraling out of control and then you're playing catch-up. And it's never fun.
Well, the other thing, Prithvi, that brings up is how much our field really has changed. So I'm a little older than you are. And when I started with this, we often got patients later in the course of their melanoma, and often they would require enucleation, which is the removal of the eye itself. But honestly, as we've started to get better and better at seeing our patients earlier and earlier, taking the eye out is probably the most uncommon thing that we do within the ocular oncology service now. Could you take us through a little bit of the shift from large tumors to medium to small, and maybe from taking the eye out to radiation to maybe being able to even treat patients without radiation therapy?
That's a really good point, Tim. And you are just a little bit older than I am, so I'll give you that. I think what we've gone through is a evolution and a revolution in many ways, and I think that's still ongoing. It is true that back in the day, these tumors were often found only at their largest point, in that they, there was no good way for patients to have advanced imaging or even an awareness, I think, per se, as to who was at risk and who wasn't. So often these tumors presented very large within the eye itself, to the point where trying to do any surgical intervention to save the eye while still making sure the tumor is adequately dealt with may have been dangerous. So removing the eye is actually, in many ways, a very complete surgical intervention for ocular melanoma, because in essentially 100% of the cases, the cancer that's within the eye itself is removed because the eye itself is removed. And in some cases, that is an important task that is required, because you're trying to balance so many factors: the patient's age, their other medical conditions, other reasons where trying to save the eye may not necessarily be in the best interest of the disease itself, but also for the patient. But over time, specialists have become quite adept and expert at using radiation to treat ocular melanoma. Now, the radiation that we use to treat these tumors is very precise and very localized. It can either be placed by a surgical procedure directly onto the eyeball itself. And this is like getting a custom, suit made. It's made specifically for each tumor, and it is adjusted for the size within the eye itself. And as it's placed there, it allows for radiation to go directly into the eye and not kind of spread elsewhere. So, our patients, Tim, yours and mine, they don't, lose their hair or get sick to their stomach or have all the other side effects that, other cancer treatments that involve radiation employ. And I think that's important to point out. Sometimes radiation can be delivered from the outside in front of the eye through a beam that comes into the eye itself, and that's done at also special centers, and there may be advantages to each. But at the end of the day, we have a very successful treatment modality by localizing these tumors and treating them directly. And we can, in many cases, stop the cancer from growing in about 95% or higher chance. And if you think about it, that's pretty phenomenal for any cancer to say that, the treatment of that organ would lead to the ability to stop that cancer from growing within the eye. So I think that's actually very good. We use radiation for tumors that are what we consider small, medium, and in some cases in the past, what we would call large. So these are all size criteria that are used to determine just the safety of this approach and the feasibility of the approach, which is, again, very customized for each patient. What's interesting now is that there are newer approaches that are being brought forward that may allow treating patients with treatments that are maybe not as damaging as radiation to the eye, and may be able to treat even smaller lesions than before.
And one of the things, at least, that's helped guide me to treating smaller and smaller tumors has been the understanding and the ability to sample the genetics of the tumor. So genetics have played a big role in virtually every field, but almost nowhere more so than within the field of eye cancers, both in adults, the uveal melanoma, and in children, retinoblastoma. Dr. Carol Shields talked to us about retinoblastoma. Can you tell me a little bit for our patients and their families about the genetics of melanoma in the eye?
Of course. And, you know, I think the understanding of the genetics of ocular melanoma has probably been the single greatest advance in this field, probably in the past 10 to 15 years. And I think that it's very exciting going forward. We know that cancers have an altered genetic profile compared to other cells in our body. They grow uncontrolled. They have ways to kind of evade the immune system. They do things that other normal healthy cells don't do, and that's what makes them cancerous. What we found now over time, and incidentally, it's been many retina specialists who have actually been leaders in understanding the genetics of ocular melanoma, is that there is a specific pattern of genetic abnormalities that are found in ocular melanoma that are distinct from other types of melanoma, skin melanomas, for example. And what that allows us to do is to identify these by taking a sample of the cancer itself within the eye. Now, this isn't as simple as taking a blood sample that you might have if I had a different type of cancer that might give me a blood test to figure that out. I don't think we're there quite yet. So this requires a specialist who has the technical skills and the experience to be able to take a small sample of this very small cancer within the very delicate organ of the eye. So we're talking about, you know, sampling maybe a couple hundred cells, which is a very small amount of material that is taken. And in doing so, doing it safely so that it does not cause any collateral damage to the eye itself. And then analyzing this on several platforms. And I think what we've been using more is using the expression of the genetic material by analyzing it and using very advanced computers to be able to tell us whether a tumor has a high, medium, or low risk of future spread, not just in the eye itself, but outside of the eye, or metastasis. And in doing so, with great accuracy now and reliability, we can tell a patient that regardless of the size of their tumor, its location, or the treatment that we use, whether that patient would have a risk that in the future this melanoma may show up elsewhere. And that information is, you know, can sometimes feel troubling, right? No one wants to have the knowledge that maybe it could show up elsewhere. But that's also the beauty of having this information, because it does provide us an opportunity to educate our patients, to work closely with our medical oncologists who work with us to help make sure that all the insides of our patients with body scans and CTs and MRI scans are looking good and healthy, and also to think about newer treatments that may help to alter that course, even if the patient is at risk. So genetics are really revolutionizing cancer treatment, and no place more so than in eye melanomas.
You know, I think that that's kind of an exciting, you know, transition for you and I to understand that the genetics of the tumor now are available to us and how important they are. But the other thing that you touched on, Prithvi, is that at one point we thought that the genetics themselves would really be the most important part. And I think you and I have some experience, as do some of the other ocular oncology and retina specialists, that when we go to very small tumors, even when those small tumors have very bad genetics, if we can get to those small tumors early enough, even with the bad genetics, those patients seem to be able to do remarkably well. So I really feel that not only do we understand the genetics, but we've kind of pushed ourselves to say earlier treatment for our patients not only improves their visual outcomes, but it may actually be a life-defining treatment early in the course of their disease, especially when their genetics may be bad. That's really a change for how I think about melanoma.
I totally agree. And, you know, it's true that size doesn't always matter. You can have a very small tumor that has the building blocks within it to do dangerous things, which include spreading and growing, you know, to other parts of the body. Being able to treat a tumor that, you know, we know is a melanoma, and it has these features and these genetic characteristics early makes a lot of sense. And I think there's been some, you know, some interesting work that has been done and continues to go forward, where maybe radiation doesn't have to be the only way to try to save an eye, but also effectively treat these melanomas. And a couple of different, you know, avenues are being explored. At the time that these biopsies or sampling of the tumor occurs, many surgeons, and especially retina surgeons, are now finding ways to try to laser or treat the tumors in a very locally destructive manner so that it can stop the growth of the tumors themselves. And there are some investigational treatments that are being looked at in clinical trials that may harness the immune system of the patient to be able to come right to the tumor and use the patient's immune system to try and destroy the tumor within the eye itself. So it's really exciting and so much more to learn. But the genetics really guide us on a lot of these important concepts and treatments, Tim.
So it seems like for our patients and their friends and families that the take-home message is that we've come an amazingly long way toward better diagnosis, earlier recognition of the melanoma, and treatment that avoids potentially removing the eye and may even spare the patient from radiation, but has an incredibly successful outcome for the eye and with the genetics that we have access to now, maybe for the patient's whole body. So it seems like an incredibly good time to have an incredibly bad disease.
I think that that's a very positive way to look at it, but truthful as well. And I think one of the things that we still feel needs to be addressed and that many are working on, including you and many others, is our patients with ocular melanoma, as we know, can have that melanoma spread to other parts of the body. And for that, we still don't have cures for that situation. But I'm hopeful that with collaborative efforts, the use of genetic information to guide some of the targeting, and also the incredible work that's being done with all the new treatments in cancer therapy, we really hope that there is going to be a change in that those statistics in the years to come and give a lot more hope to our patients that may have these high-risk melanomas.
So I'd like to thank my friend and colleague and ocular oncology specialist, Dr. Prithvi Muthunjaya, speaking to us today about uveal melanoma on Retina Health for Life. Thank you, Prithvi.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks for tuning in to Retina Health for Life from the President's Corner. You can watch and listen to more episodes on the ASRS YouTube channel and on popular podcast directories, including Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and Spotify. For even more information about safeguarding your vision for a lifetime, visit asrs.org/patients and follow ASRS on both Facebook and Twitter. Retina Health for Life is made possible in part through generous support from the Foundation of the American Society of Retina Specialists, Allergan, Genentech, Novartis, and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. See you soon.